Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Taiksim Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. In this week's Dharma Talk, meditation instructor Kathy Lamo Jackson reviews the proper posture for shamatha, or quiet sitting meditation, and gives a teaching on the Mahamudra lineage prayer, detailing its history, its meaning, and its importance in the practice of Tibetan Buddhism. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Taiksim Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to cover a couple of topics. First, I should introduce myself, because some of you might not know me or seen me. Though I've been coming for 31 years, I work a lot of nights, and especially since we've moved here, I've been working a very different type of lifestyle. But before that, I was here a lot. So I'm so happy to see all of you. My name is Kathy Jackson, or some people call me Kathy Lamo. Lamo is my retreat name. It means to see the divine with everyone, within everyone, which is my dearest challenge. Today we're going to do two things. I am a real believer in learning and understanding why we chant certain things. For so many years, I've chanted the Dorje Chong prayer, or the Mahamudra lineage prayer, or the Vajradhara lineage prayer, or the Dorje Chong Tungma. It's all the same thing. And it's something I hope over time you all memorize, because it just is so comprehensive and inspiring of why we're even here. But before we do that, and because we're going to talk a little bit about shamatha during this, I would like to remind everyone how to sit. Sitting in meditation is the key. In Zen Buddhism, they believe if you sit properly, your mind automatically is shifted and is in the correct space to be open and clear. So when we sit, and I'm going to sit over here for a second just to kind of demo a little bit more, and I'm going to go around the room, and no one will be graded. Can mostly everyone see me? Probably some of you on that side can't. I'm sorry. Uh-oh. I'm now breathing. I can hear it. Sorry for the extra sound effects. So when we sit, the most important part is what you're sitting on. And in our lineage, the seven points of sitting, and of course sitting in a chair is just as good as sitting on the floor, this is called the seven points of Airochana. So that means there's seven different ways to hold the body. And if you do it properly, and after a while, the first time you're going to hurt no matter what. But I thought we would walk through all the steps, and it always starts at the foundation, which is where your legs are. So let's first start with the cushion. Most people in the beginning, their hips are a little tight. And the whole secret is you're working with your hips and not your knees. Don't ever force your knees. The knee is a very primitive joint. The hip is much more flexible. So you would sit on a cushion. In the beginning, it would be four finger widths of your own hand. Put your hand up, look at that, and try and find a cushion that would be about that high. And that's about the height of the cushion. I'm sitting just on a little one because I'm a little bit more open now. My hips are more open. But, and if you're comfortable, is everyone comfortable on their seat? And now let's talk about what you're actually sitting on. In yoga, we have the term the sitting bone. And that's the bone at the very top of your leg. Why does everyone look for the bone right now? I hope this is not recorded. I'm joking. So you run your hand along the back of your leg, and you'll feel kind of a little ball there. And because you don't want to sit on your fanny, you want to sit on your sitting bone. So sometimes you'll see a lot of Tibetan masters, and they'll kind of go forward for a second, and that way you're on it. Do people feel it? So the secret really is just kind of go forward, and you sort of move your butt out of the way, and then come up. And if that's too uncomfortable, just adjust it a little bit. How is that? Is that comfortable? Because as we sit over time, and if you pick up bad habits, it's going to hurt, and we don't want it to hurt. So that's one of the biggest things, is to do that. The next one, of course, is we pull up, right? Well, first, let's do the leg posture. No, I forget the order. I think it's, is it pulling up is number two? It's been so long. Okay, I haven't taught this in years, but I practice it every day. So we pull up. We pull up from, you very gently tighten the groin up a little bit to the navel, and then just let it go. And that balances the energies of the body, the subtle energies. Next, we should make sure that the back has its natural curvature. So we're not like this, but we're not like this either. You know, we're trying to develop a nice, straight, natural posture. The hands can either be at the navel like this, but for most Americans, because we sit at tables and chairs and couches, we need a little bit more props. So we take the thumb and put it at the base of the ring finger and make a really gentle fist and put it down on the leg where it's comfortable for your shoulders. Some people tend to fall asleep in meditation, so you might want them stretched out a little bit more, but most people have a slight bend in the elbow. How's it going so far? Okay. Don't sit up too straight or you'll exhaust yourself. Don't do it for me, just relax. And then make sure the chest is open. And by open, I mean, especially women, we need to open our chest a little bit more. Don't be afraid of having breast. And some people in the Zen tradition say when you sit, you almost feel slightly like you're going backwards because you want to stay that open. And the shoulders are not just straight down. My shoulders are slightly up and tucked a little bit in. Do you feel that? So experiment with your shoulders because that will affect your neck. The chin is to be very gently tucked in, not down, but just like someone threw a little pie at your face. And it didn't hurt, it was just air pie. So you might want to put your finger on your chin and just gently tuck it in. And if you do that correctly, your gaze automatically goes downward. How's everyone doing? Good? And then the mouth, so that you don't drool all over yourself. I remember when I was a kid watching Kung Fu, and he would sit a certain way, and he wouldn't drool or be too thirsty during meditation. I thought that was so cool. This was back in the 60s. But anyway, this is really what it is. So if this is your teeth, your upper palate, your tongue just snuggles back there. It's just gently lifted. It's not curled, just lifted up. It's actually a natural position of the tongue. The jaw is unlocked. Check everything again. How is your legs? How is your shoulder? How is your chest? Are you open? Do you have a smile on your face? Look down and breathe. So now I'm going to go around the room, if that's okay. Any questions? Oh, everyone's looking good. Don't forget to breathe. Looking good. Chairs are the hardest ones. Can I touch you? Just a little bit more. Bring the chin up a little. And then tuck it in a little bit. Yeah, that's perfect. And adjust it. Play with it. Looking very nice. So now for the rest of the talk, you're all going to sit like this. I'm joking. Very nice. Very nice. Okay, you're looking downward somehow. So let's come up just a little bit. Just a tiny bit and look more forward, not down. The head is very heavy. We have to be careful as we age. I had a stroke years ago and I just started hunching all the time. I had no idea how heavy the head is. Everyone looks great. Okay, you can just release it. If any of you have ever met my teacher, Kenpo Karchu Rinpoche, he is always like, he's 95, he's always like this. In retreat, they train you to really tuck the chin in because it keeps all those subtle energies of the body in alignment, and the mind is focused and very aware. So please try and remember and remind yourself as you're doing this at home, check on your posture. If you have questions, ask Lama Kathy or me or Lama Tom or any of the instructors. They all know how to do this. It's just sometimes you need to have someone else tell you. I didn't know years ago how badly my posture had shifted after my stroke, but my neck always hurt. And then someone imitated how I looked. I'm like, oh, I was kind of like this a lot. My neck went out all the time. And it took me years of exercise and just practicing every day. And I feel much stronger now. And you will feel the strength, and you're also, you very gently pull up on your abdomen. No matter how skinny or big we are, our abdomen gets a nice workout in this. Are there any questions?
Also, when you're being taught, you should have a straight spine.
Yes. And that's what I'm going to talk.
Okay.
Marilyn just said, when you're receiving teachings, it's very nice to sit at this in this posture. Not for me, I'm very ordinary. But if like Lama Kathy or a teacher, because that way your mind becomes more supple and open to hearing what's being said. Because again, I can't explain it, but try it. It's something you should need to just try. Thank you for allowing me to do that. I'm an old yoga teacher, and I really learned that posture is everything in life. And in Zen Mind, Beginner Mind, they talk all about how you sit will affect your practice, and it really does. And there's another thing. If you tend to lean, some people are leaners, and that will affect you to be a little too excited or too depressed. So this is kind of a serious thing, but a wonderful thing. We get to adjust it all the time. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the Dorje Chang prayer. Has anyone ever gotten instruction on this besides you guys? This is a prayer that is one of the famous prayers to memorize. And if you go to the monastery, has anyone been to the monastery? It's always done first. It's done before all teachings. Why? Because this is the path, and this is the Dharma, this is the Buddha, his teachings, and the community, and everything that we're supposed to do in order to become a Buddha, all wrapped up in a little tiny prayer. Yeah, so does everyone have a prayer book? It's the very first prayer. And I just realized your translation in English is totally different from mine, so I will use your prayer. So at home, and I highly recommend you can, by the way, download this anywhere. I can always give you a link. At home, I would do this right after you do your refuge prayer in the morning. If you're doing Ngundro, anyone here doing Ngundro? And Ngundro, you do this prayer. And this prayer is the roadmap and done throughout Ngundro. It's part of the visualization. Okay, so tunes. You can just do a straight chant. And I highly recommend, today we'll do it in Tibetan, and then we'll always do it in English. And then as we go on, we'll mostly do it in English this morning, or this afternoon. So there's many tunes at home. You can just do a straight chant, Dorje Jongjen Delo Narodong. But because we're with a group, I'm going to do three different tunes today, if I can remember them. In the old days, we just had one tune. I'm going to try and remember it. And so in this practice, we always put our hands in prayer. And by doing so, you put your palms together. You do not flatten them. You pretend that you have a wish-fulfilling jewel in the middle of your hand that will remove all suffering. And when you do this, this is a type of supplication mudra with the hands in prayer. And usually the person chanting hums a note so that everyone kind of knows what we're going to chant. Om Dorje Chanjen Delo Narodon Marpa Mila
Chodje Gambova Dwason Shija Kunjan Garmapa Jeji Chungi Yupa Zinandan Drita Tsasum Vaden Drupazo Zablam Chajya Jela Nga Yepe Nyame Jogun Dapo Gajula Sova Depso Gajula Manam Jupatino Namdar Jinjilo Jinlo Kongi Kambar Sumbarjin Zenor Kunla Jachin Mepadan Sedidutar Chupe Gom Chenla Nekor Jenba Mepar Jinjilo Moko Gom Ki Gowor So Parjin Mengate Go Jepe Lamala Jundu Sowa Jepe Gom Chenla Jumimuku Jewar Jinjilo Yenme Gom Ki Moshir Sun Parjin Ganchar Tope Ngowo Somate Macho Deko Jope Gonchenla Gonjalo Dan Drawar Jinjilo Nam tok ngô wô chú cô sôn bà xin chí yán ma yên chí yán chár vá la mang ác rô bà chár vê gom chén la gôr tê yê mê tô bà Jinjilo Kewa Kuntu Yandat Lamadan Brahmi Chuki Palalon Chuchin Sadalam Ki Yuntin Ratsodne Dorje Changi Gopan Nyor Dorje.
I forgot to say in the beginning that don't worry how you sound, it's fine. It's perfect. And so never worry about that. So let's now say it in English, and then I'm going to talk about how it's divided into six components. Great Vajradhara, Talopa, Naropa, and Marpa, Milarepa, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa, knower of the three times omniscient Karmapa, lineage holders of the four great and eight lesser schools, Drikung, Taklung, Salpa, Glorious Drukpa, and others, you have mastered the profound path of Mahamudra, the Dakpo Kagyu, unrivaled protectors of sentient beings, I pray to you, Kagyu Lamas. Grant your blessings that I may follow your tradition and example. And now this is the next section.
As is taught, detachment is the foot of meditation. Attachment to food and wealth disappears. To the meditator who gives up ties to this life, grant your blessing that attachment to ownership and honor cease. As is taught, devotion is the head of meditation. To the Lama opens the door to the profound oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to him, grant your blessing that uncontrived devotion be born within. As is taught, unwavering attention is a body of meditation. Whatever arises is a fresh nature of thought. To the meditator who rests there in natural interest, grant your blessings that then meditation be free from intellectualization. As is taught, the essence of thoughts is Dharmakaya. They are nothing whatsoever, and yet they arise. To the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind, grant your blessing that the inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. Through all of my births, may I not be separated from the perfect Lama and so enjoy the glory of the Dharma. May I completely accomplish the qualities of the path and stages and quickly attain the state of Ajodhara. So in essence, this is a roadmap to your path to becoming a Buddha in our lineage. I wanted to speak for a moment about references, because I always do. Two teachers whose works I really enjoy for this. One is, you can get it online, and you can always look at this at the end, from Kenshin Trungpa Rinpoche. He's one of the main senior lamas and tutors of the Karmapa, and so he's a reincarnated tulku, and throughout all of his years, he's created so many monasteries and nunneries and retreat centers and regular centers for everyone. And he travels throughout the world. He lives in Nepal and Canada now, but he's a stupendous teacher. And he's very thorough, which I've always loved about his teachings. So this is just something I got online, but because I knew I had a book of his, but I can't find it on this topic. And the other one is by one of my teachers, Tsitu Rinpoche. He lives mostly in Himachal Pradesh, India. He's one of the three heart sons. So in our lineage, we have Karmapa, and then we have called the three heart sons. So normally, when the Karmapa is young and they're older, and so they're his main tutors, and then it sort of circles. So then when they die and they're young children, and then the Karmapa by then is aged, he's then their tutor, so it goes back and forth. So that's one way they always keep the lineage going. So today is all about lineage, and I forgot that I had worked on this maybe 20 years ago. I found my notes. I laughed so hard when I looked at them. But there's one thing in them I did like. Where is it? I kind of did a timeline schematic, because I think sometimes we forget just how ancient our lineage itself is. Over 1,000 years old. That's really something to think about, an unbroken lineage. Of course, it goes all the way back to the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, but when it came from India into Tibet, it's been around for over 1,000 years from the lineage of the Karmapas. But let's first talk about this text. This text was written by a teacher. His name is Bengar Jampal Sangpo, and he was a student of the sixth Karmapa and a main tutor of the seventh. This is written in the 8th century AD, or current era. He was in retreat for 18 years on a tiny island where, in Tibet, he was on a lake, and maybe every year the lake froze so someone could bring food in, but not always. But he was a really accomplished yogi, meaning that he did really amazing meditations. And this prayer came to him in a vision, and he wrote it down, and it's been used since then. And so Trungpa Rinpoche's teaching quotes a lot of his teachings on this, because what we usually get are teachings do commentaries, but actually he, Bengar, we'll just call him Bengar, he had a whole commentary on this. So I thought today it would be, since we don't have a lot of time, it'd just be nice to kind of know how this is broken up and why it's so significant. So let's first talk about the homage. which is the first 8 lines. But this English thing is all broken up. So I'm going to read Trungpa Rinpoche's translation, which is very similar. And so this is who we're praying to. This is who has kept everything going. And now we're keeping it going. And it starts with the word Great Vajradhara, Tilo, Naro, Marpa, Mila, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa. So in Tibetan Buddhism, we have a long and a short lineage. This is, we're talking the shorter lineage right now. If you do Ngundro, we do the whole lineage tree. It shows all the Indian saints and their teachers and everything. But this is kind of slightly more of the direct, shorter lineage. So Great Vajradhara, is that a picture of him? Do we have Vajradhara on the shrine? No. Sorry, I'm so used to the old days when we had lineage tankas. We had, anyway, we don't have that right now, but we will again. See if there's a picture of him in here. No. So Vajradhara is, instead of Shakyamuni Buddha, he is considered the primordial Buddha of all times. And so I think most of you know by now, we have more than one Buddha. Do all of you know that? There's the five Buddhas. There's Shakyamuni Buddha, who was historically the fourth historical Buddha that was here on this planet, on Earth. But we have a primordial Buddha who is the essence of all the Buddhas, and his name is Dorje Chang. So on our tankas, our paintings, you'll see a blue Buddha, and that's him. And his arm is crossed holding a vajra and a bell, means and wisdom. And so there's a lot of symbolism. And he is the one who is the essence of all enlightenment of Dharmakaya. So, I'm just kind of translating this out right now. And so basically this first part are all of our lineage masters that we pray to. Tilo is short for Tilopa and Naropa. And they were two very amazing teachers that did come from India. And I think the common thread of every teacher that we've ever learned about are their hardships. We all have hardships, and it's so nice to know they had them too. They had doubt. I always love to hear that they really went through a lot. Oh, that's right, I'm being taped. I'll have to watch my words. They went through a lot of stuff, you know, and they processed it, and they often almost gave it all up, but they kept going, and through the blessings of their faith in their teachers, they kept going. So I'm going to talk a little bit about them. Tilopa lived in 988 to 1069, and he was very accomplished over time. He became a very accomplished master of Buddhism. He was trained by so many different teachers, and we're talking India. So he was at Nalanda University, which was set up after the Buddha had died, and he went to all these. In the old days, they would go to all different teachers, and they didn't have cars or buses or trains. They went usually by foot, and they usually just carried their food with them or begged for it. But he actually got so many different transmissions. And then one of his teachers said, walk away from the monastery, walk away from the university. I want you to go live at this brothel and be the bouncer and be the procurer for the head mistress. And everyone just went, what is he doing? So that's kind of why he's often famous. And in doing so, her father was a sesame seed maker, so he, during the day, made sesame seeds, made sesame paste, which is eaten a lot in Asia. But then he kept applying all the meditations he learned, and he woke up fully. He had a full realization. He went through four different levels of realization. And so he left there, and then he became a fisherman, which most would consider horrible. But what they didn't know was every fish he caught, he did ejection of consciousness, so he released them onto another world. Anyway, so I'm jumping ahead. So then his main student was called Naropa, and you see the word Nara. Naro, that means broken bones. Naropa is how we usually know him. He's the opposite. He came from royal family, very educated. He was so royal and regal. His family didn't want him in the ordinary world, so they immediately took him off to the monastery, and he went again, got some teachings. And one day, a very old hag showed up in his room, in his monastery. He's like, who is this old lady, you know, toothless, and hello there, you know. I'm sure it was really strange. And she said, who are you, and what do you know?
And she said, I bet you know everything about Buddhism. He said, yes, I do. And then she asked him a few other questions. And he thought, well, you know, I've already sort of shown her how smart I am. I'll just keep going on the same train here and keep saying yes. And so she asked him a few more questions, and he actually didn't make it to the last one. And she fell to the floor weeping and said, you're so smart, but you have no compassion. And if you ever, and so, and she started weeping, and he said, stop, stop, tell me, how can I get more compassion? She said, you're going to have to go to see somebody else, and that will be Tilopa. So another one, he leaves the monastery, and they're like, no, you can't leave the monastery. You're one of the most famous people in logic. In those days, they would have gatekeepers at the monastery that were famous in debate and logic, and he was in charge of the one hole on the north gate. And they said, you really can't just take off and look for somebody like this. We don't even know who this Tilo or Tilopa is. So for years, he looked for him. Bad weather, no food, you name it. And so one day he went to a village, and they said, oh, yeah, you mean the fisherman guy? He said, yeah. He said, I don't know, but he had never heard of a Tilopa. And so he went, and he met him. And he was rather appalled to see this old guy standing there taking these fish and doing something to them and then biting their heads off and then drying them. And he thought, how appalling, you know, why would I want to be here? And so he walked over to him, and then Tilopa summed him up and asked a few questions, basically interviewed him and said goodbye. And then he realized maybe this is the real deal. So he started talking to him some more. And Tilopa asked him a few more questions, and he just shook his head and walked away and went on top of a mountain. And Naropa followed him. And he said, if you really had faith in who I am, you'd jump off this mountain right now. And he did. Tilopa went down, and he was still conscious. He said, how are you feeling? He said, not very well. I've never felt this pain in my life. Because he had never had any pain. And he said, that's what pain is. And he healed him instantly. And that's where his name came from. But he still wasn't awake. So then they debated on, and over time, he finally had a teaching with him, and Tilopa picked up his slipper, just smacked him in the head, and he woke up. Those are kind of the stories you hear from the ancient days. I'm waiting for that. But anyway, not the jumping off. So this is just, and so these stories aren't hidden. If you go to Karmapa's website, you can click on it called the Golden Rosary. They've done just an exquisite job. Also on our Karmakagyu, our monastery website, of our lineages, and there's books on them. Many people I know, when they went to college, they started, you know, researching one specific teacher, and they've helped translate these books. So there's tremendous inspiration out there. So I'm going on and on about these two characters, these amazing people who, and they were from the Indian transmission. And with them came Mahamudra, all these different tantric treatises. And so from all the teachings they got, it then moved forward. And so after him was Marpa, who was from Tibet. Marpa had to go down out of, Tibet had no Buddhism. He was funded a little bit, and he had three very treacherous trips going. I can't tell you, I lived in Nepal and India for a little while. I couldn't imagine coming from Tibet at 10, 12,000 feet down to the plains of the Ganges. So it took years each trip because the bodies had to acclimate, and it was by foot. And slowly he would look for different teachers, and finally he found Naropa, or they found each other. And so Marpa started the Tibetan tradition, which is, so Marpa was a householder, by the way, and his main student was Milarepa, the famous yogi, sometimes you see in blue-green, who, due to an injustice in his family, his mother encouraged him to go to black magic, and he killed a whole village. But he's a famous yogi now. But over time, he saw teachers, he got blessings, and his mind completely changed. So our tradition is full of some of the most amazing selfless beings. Today, even. Today, we have them. We have them here. Lama Kathy, Lama Tom. It's amazing. So many people here are always serving the Dharma. So the whole point of all of this is to start becoming inspired. And I still do it. And I've been here, I told you, 31 years. I read books still. I always have one next to my bed that always inspires me.
Anyway, let's go through. I'm going to read the one book that I used. It was Great Vajradhara. We mentioned that's the Paimoda Buddha, Tilopa, Naropa. They came from India. They took it and they gave it to the Tibetans. There's Marpa, Milarepa, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa. Gampopa was responsible for creating the 8 schools of Tibetan Buddhism. And then knower of the 3 times, Karmapa, holder of the 4 great and 8 lesser schools. So the Karmapa was a student of Gampopa. So this is all, and if any of you ever do Ngundro, there's a lovely chart to show how it's all related. Then they mentioned the lineages, the Jikun, Taklung, Tsalpo, those are the 4, Drukpa. Then there's 6 others. Most of them are not around anymore. The main lineage that's very active is ours, which is Karmakadya or Karmakamsang, just to let you know. So the Karmapa today, you'll see that in a lot of our texts, Karmakamsang, that's our lineage. That's one of the 8. They were masters of profound path of Mahamudra. Does anyone know what Mahamudra is? Yes? A seal, like seal? Right, that's one translation, but why would we want Mahamudra to be our goal, to become a seal? Mahamudra is the nature of your mind.
Right.
Yeah, but yes, one translation is great seal. I don't mean to be facetious, but thank you. Yeah, so our goal in this room, someday all of you will become awakened Buddhas. And one method for that is to learn the true nature of your mind. And in our tradition, it's called Mahamudra, or great seal. So here it says, masters of profound path of Mahamudra, incomparable protector of beings, the Dakpo, Kagyu, I supplicate you, the Kagyu Gurus, I hold your lineage, grant your blessing so that I will follow your example. So it doesn't say, worship me, and that's it. They are our examples to become that. So that's what, so when you chant this prayer, please hold them in your heart and thank them. It's something very profound to thank. And aspire that we will become them. And that's later in the prayer. Are there any questions yet? I'm kind of throwing a million words out, I'm sorry, but yes.
Did you say Karma Kagyu is a lineage, or did you use
that? Karma Kagyu and Karma Kamsang, they're interchangeable.
Okay,
got it. I don't have a dictionary, I forget what Kamsang means. Yeah. Good question. So the next part, we have, I think, 6 or 5 other phrases. So the second, and the meat and the whole, the main part of this, the body of this practice, are instructions and wishes that all sentient beings are able to practice this correctly. So you guys have this translation, so we'll read it. Let's go for the next one. It's on the 1, 2, 3. On the 5th line, when it says Zhenlok, or it says, as is taught, detachment. Do you see that one? So we'll first do that. It says, as is taught, detachment is the foot of meditation. Attachment to food and wealth disappears to the meditator who gives up ties to this life. Grant your blessing that attachment to ownership and honor cease. So that's the next one. So as we move through the paths here at the center, everyone here has a slightly different but similar career path as a Buddhist. Most people come here, learn how to calm their mind, tame it a little bit. But we don't stop there because that'll take a long time. So we start throwing in other things and keep taming your mind. So, you know, I hope people have all had opportunities to see Lama Kathy, to talk to her about your career as a Buddhist. You can tell her I said that. I'm serious. So, because let me tell you, time really is fleeting. So this is such a rare opportunity, what we have right here, that we even had a freaking fire and we still have a center, which is really miraculous. And we're able to meet here. We're in a country where we're able to practice Buddhism. That is not everywhere, no matter what we're thinking anymore. We have our health. I work in a hospital as a chaplain. I see people that would give anything to be able to sit in this room right now, sit up in a chair, or even be able to understand what we're talking about. Many people hear about Buddhism, but you guys are taking it on. You're using it the way it should be. So this is a very rare opportunity. So the very first thing they often want to talk about is turning your mind away from the attachments of this world.
this world, no matter what we do, is we'll always have desire for things and distractions. And that can really cause a waste of time in your life. We have so much emphasis in our culture. I'm always amazed, not only electronics, but really good food and really good movies and really nice clothes and to look really good and a really nice car and really nice house. We spend a lot of time on stuff that's going to be around after we're dead. So you might want to really put it in perspective, and that's basically what this saying is. Grant your, what was the trans, I should have used this earlier. It said, grant your blessing that attachment to ownership and honor cease. It's not that we all know you have to have food and clothing and a place to live and all that. I mean, let's be practical here, but don't get carried away with it and just have that be your whole God. Don't have that become your deity. That's which seems to be the problem in the world anymore. And this is actually the foundation of all the practices in this. The first one was the homage to the lineage, but this is one of the big cores, is how to slowly turn your mind away from getting so embroiled in all of this stuff. And Trungpa Rinpoche compares this to the four ordinaries, that this is a very precious opportunity we have. Everything's impermanent. Everything's driven by our karma. And even though we like all this stuff, we have a taste of unsatisfactoriness of it. Hopefully you've developed a little unsatisfactoriness of samsara. Does that make sense? Yeah, it's sometimes I get carried away with things. I'm like, whoa, I started really getting into YouTube. I'm like, oh my, I'd rather watch that than go practice. That's like the big red flag. You know, it doesn't happen often, but when that happens, you have to look at that and just go, oh yeah, that's fine. So now if I watch YouTube, it's only Buddhist stuff. So that helps me a lot. You know, I kind of shifted for a little bit, but now I don't have time for that either. Let's go on to the next one. I'm sorry, I don't want to run too late. So the next one is about meditation. So first, and just to let some of you know that might not know about it, we have a practice after shamatha. Lama Kathy also teaches and emphasizes Tonglen, where how to develop compassion within yourself. Then later on, we start doing the preliminaries, Mahamudra preliminaries. And so there's two parts to it. The first big part are called the four ordinaries, and it's to turn your mind away from samsara, and you meditate on what a wonderful opportunity this is and how everything will crumble, is crumbling in front of you even now, and to be cautious of your karma, your how to live a virtuous life, and I already mentioned unsatisfactoriness of samsara. So that is the core. After that, we start talking about meditation, and that's in here. Moving down here a little bit more. Let's see. It's under, almost in the middle page, where it says, Mugu Gongi, as is taught, devotion is the head of meditation. The Lama opens the door to profound oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to him or her, grant your blessing that uncontrived devotion be born within. And so this has a lot to do. And then in Trungpa Rinpoche's, it was slightly different. Grant your blessing that my meditation is free of conception. And this is where we learn shamatha. And after shamatha, and shamatha is to have an undistracted mind. And if you ever need to have your shamatha tweaked, talk to Lama Kathy or some of the instructors here. Because there's a lot of different stages to shamatha. Shamatha is a lovely foundation. Even if you do it just for a few minutes a day, it's just so powerful on the cushion. It has a wonderful effect off the cushion. So it's considered one of our root practices to do. After that, later on, you'll have pointed out instructions on Mahamudra. So that's also part of this. Next is considered the head of meditation. It says, let's see. Now I'm on the ninth one under Yangmei on the right hand. You see that Yangmei Gongyi? Altogether, as is taught, unwavering attention is the body of meditation. Whatever arises is the fresh nature of thought. To the meditator who rests there in naturalness, I can't say that word today, naturalness, grant your blessing that meditation be free from intellectualization.
And so this one, wow, the translations are just so different. This has more to do, this is the head of meditation, to do with the devotion and aspiration. And this has to do with Lundro, a developing devotion to the lineage. Then next, as is taught, the essence of thought is Dharmakaya. They are nothing whatsoever, and yet they arise. To the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind, grant your blessing that inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. And this has to do with Latong, which is some teachers also teach vipassana. Kenpo Rinpoche doesn't emphasize that much, does he? No, we don't teach that much. But anyway, I'm going to read the other translation. The essence of thoughts is Dharmakaya, which is the all expanse, and it is taught. Nothing whatsoever, but everything arises from it. The meditator who arises in unceasing play, grant your blessing that I realize the inseparability of samsara and nirvana. Samsara, I talked about a little bit, is this entire world and all of its shortcomings and beautiful things, and nirvana is awakening. It's what I love about Vajrayana. We kind of ride the razor's edge right in the middle of it. And then next, we'll go to the ending one, which has to do with how to move along the path at the end, and it's a dedication. We're now down to all the way down at Ikewa, the third to the last line. I'm looking on the right. On the left side, it says Kor De Yer, but over here on the right side, it says, through all my births, may I not be separated from the perfect Lama and so enjoy the glory of the Dharma. May I completely accomplish the qualities of the path and stages and quickly attain the state of Vajradhara. And this translation says, through all of my births, may I not be separated from the perfect Guru and so enjoy the splendor of the Dharma, which are the teachings of the Buddha. Perfecting the virtues of the paths and bhumis, so perfecting your own virtue and going through the different paths, the different stages, bhumis are a type of accomplishment. May I speedily attain the state of Vajradhara, so may I become a Buddha. So basically, we started in this practice, let's look at the time. We started in this practice taking homage to all of these different teachers, and then we went through the different stages of how we learn to become a Buddha. And then at the end, we offer dedication. So it's a very simple, tiny little prayer, but it's really nice to study. So I really hope that you study it again. So let's say it again together in English. That's my alarm. So we'll do it in English this time only. A little water. Are there any questions before we do that? I meant to bring a computer. We don't have a screen, do we? No, I wanted to do a thing and show pictures, but anyway. All right. Great Vajradhara, Tilopa, Naropa, and Marpa, Milarepa, Lord of Dharma, Gampopa, knower of the three times, omniscient Karmapa, lineage holders of the four great and eight lesser schools, Drikung, Taklung, Salpa, Glorious Drupa, and others, you have mastered the profound path of Mahamudra, the Dakpo Kagyu, unrivaled protector of sentient beings. I pray to you, Kagyu Lamas, grant your blessing that I may follow your tradition and example. As is taught, detachment is the foot of meditation. Attachment to food and wealth disappears. To the meditator who gives up ties to this life, grant your blessing that the attachment to ownership and honor cease. As is taught, devotion is the head of meditation. The Lama opens the door to the profound oral teachings. To the meditator who always turns to them, grant your blessing that uncontrived devotion be born within. As is taught, unwavering attention is the body of meditation. Whatever arises is the fresh nature of thought. To the meditator who rests there in naturalness, grant your blessing that meditation be free from intellectualization. As is taught, the essence of thoughts is Dharmakaya. They are nothing whatsoever, and yet they arise. To the meditator who reflects upon the unobstructed play of the mind, grant your blessing that the inseparability of samsara and nirvana be realized. Through all my births, may I not be separated from the perfect Lama and so enjoy the glory of the Dharma. May I completely accomplish the qualities of the path and stages and quickly attain the state of Ajodhara. There's one thing I do want to read in Sita Rinpoche's book. He went through it almost the same way, but used a few different terms. It's the one, some of my prayers, I didn't have this section, but I think it's in the one that we just did, the non-distraction one. So I'm going to read about that because he does a really lovely summary about all of these. At the beginning of this big prayer about the lineage, it's to whom you are praying. And then here, what you're praying, that is the first and second verses, two aspects of the prayer. But then this part is, as is taught, non-distraction is the body of meditation. Whatever arises is fresh and is the nature of thought. Please grant your blessing to the meditator who simply rests in the nature of thought so that the meditation is free from conceptualization. This third verse describes Yangpa Mepa, and it's, I love this Tibetan translation, non-wandering the wandering mind. Isn't that great? Non-wandering the wandering mind. Non-wandering is the main body of this meditation. For a yogi, the main practice is not to be distracted, not to wander, but to have a clear, harmonious, stable, and focused state of mind. We're talking shamatha. How's everyone? Do you wander or you don't wander? I go back and forth. And that's the beauty of shamatha. It's a type of mind training. So in the beginning, you're going to find you're wandering a bit. Oh yeah, I was on number 7 and now I've been sitting here for 5 minutes thinking about what to do after I'm done. And then, so that's a type of wandering, and that's not unusual in the beginning. Mind is this, let's see. So non-wandering, the wandering mind, whatever arises, may I realize the fresh nature of the thought, and may I realize and be able to maintain that state of mind, which is natural, uninfluenced, harmonious, and clear, and which is the state of being in the present. So all those different things, wandering, non-wandering, wandering, and then to be natural, uninfluenced, harmonious, mind, being in the present. I'm sure you've all had glimpses of this. Then he has some Tibetan. So may I, the practitioner, finally find that there is nothing to meditate. Meditating and practicing for many years is not for the purpose of becoming a meditation expert. We're not trying to be a meditation champion. We meditate so we don't have to meditate. That is the ultimate goal. Everything becomes meditation. Every state becomes a perfect state. So, as a practitioner, may I achieve that? That is the third particular part. And then he talks about the summary. I'm going to look at the time. A few minutes. Up to this point, I've made it clear the introduction to Vajrayana Buddhism. And as far as the historical lineage is concerned, because many people get a little confused about the lineage. For example, when we say Kagyu, people think of it as just one, but there's actually Marpa Kagyu, Tsongkhapa Kagyu. Tsongkhapa Kagyu is Kali Rinpoche, and two lineages. They have the same single source, but they're many different lineages. Then Vajrayana Buddhism means eight lineages, all coming from India. Then when we say the four major or greater and eight lesser, we mean the branches of Marpa Kagyu lineage from Gampopa. So he went in through that. So he was clarifying different things. So I think the most important thing I would like to share today is things like prayers can really be a nice tool for inspiration. As you practice over the years, you want to keep your practice really fresh, not complacent, not lazy, not, oh yeah, I'll just do this and then, because it's very easy. After a while, you can get to a certain point where you feel good, oh good, and just keep going for that. There's much more to this lineage and much more to our goals than just feeling comfortable and feeling peaceful. It's a side effect, no question. But there's a lot of work to be done. So I hope you keep going with your meditation, and I hope that you stay inspired. So for a moment, let's just quietly dedicate the merit for all those that are suffering, all those that have not met the truth or the Dharma, and those that are really struggling. Please dedicate all the goodness and patience that you had here today for them. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.